Thanks, Ian. Let me add my welcome to Joel's. Great to see everyone here today. Good to see some visitors and some family visiting and others here for the first time. So, hello, my name's Andrew, one of the pastors here. It's great to see you and happy Easter. You'll need a service sheet for what we're going to do next. And really, all I'm going to say is at the front of the service sheets, it's on the theme verse, is the verse, is the talk today. And can I say, I can still remember it because of that annoying children's song that we watched the video of. So this was, those of you who remember Sam and Eva James, this was their doing. Sam wrote the tune and Eva did the dance, and Christ died for our sins. And it looks silly, but it's brilliant, isn't it, how music has the power to get words into your head. I can now remember the whole of these verses of 1 Corinthians 15 just from the song. Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. He was buried. He was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. He appeared to Cephas, he appeared to the 12, he appeared to more than 500 brothers, he appeared to James and all the apostles. Last of all, he appeared to me. And I didn't think I'd ever be able to remember all the list of the resurrection appearances of Jesus in order, but thanks to the song, I can. So I commend it to you. You can find it on YouTube. You can watch it on loop, which we did in lockdown a few years ago, and do the dance moves if you want. And words get into your head as you sing them. And these are really, really important words for Christians, and I want to suggest that they're actually very important words for everyone in the world. Let me just read you the beginning of 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you're being saved, if you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the scriptures, that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12, then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles. Last of all, as one untimely born, he appeared also to me. Here's the question. What is the essence of the Christian message, the Christian gospel? And it should be an easy answer, easy question to answer. But the trouble is that with Jesus, I suppose with all famous characters actually of history, lots of different people want to hijack him for their cause. So you end up with lots of different Jesuses, depending on who you're talking to. So you have the eco-Jesus, if you're talking to people who are worried about climate change. Or you have the, and gosh, this is topical, isn't it? You have the Republican Jesus, if you saw the news that Donald Trump this week is publishing his own Bible. It's quite a chilling thing, actually, I think. It's in the Bible. And you also get the American Bill of Rights and the American Constitution and a couple of hearty nationalistic songs written by one of his friends, all bound together in the same volume, which will cost you $60 by Donald Trump, Jesus, the Republican. Or you could easily get Jesus, the socialist, or Jesus, the crusader for whatever cause you want him to be the poster boy for. There's a lot of different Jesuses in the world, or versions of Jesus, a lot of different versions of the Christian gospel. And even it's one of the things that confuses people about the church, isn't it? Like, well, which version of Christianity am I supposed to follow? Because, you know, there's, well, you do your thing at Grace Church Greenwich, and then there's the Catholic Church down the road, and then there's the Russian Orthodox Church that's in cahoots with Putin, and then there's also all sorts of different churches. How do I know which one to believe? Well, here, I hope, is a great place to answer that question, because this is one of Jesus' earliest followers, the Apostle Paul, setting out what at the very beginning was the Christian message. Here, let me just read you the first verses again. I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, by which you're being saved. This is one of the earliest letters of the New Testament, probably written about 15 years after Jesus' death and resurrection. And Paul refers to an earlier message. I want to remind you of what I said previously. So we're getting into just a very few years of the events themselves. This is the message that was preached about those events. If you want the kind of original Christianity, the Christianity that goes back to the time of Jesus itself, then this is a good place to look. One of the probably earliest Christian confessions or Christian formulations of Christian belief. What is it that they believed? And maybe you're thinking, I don't really care, to be honest. I mean, this is a very historical thing. You know, it's 2,000 years ago. What relevance does that have to me today in 21st century Britain? What difference does it have in a world of conflict in Ukraine and in Russia and in Palestine and in Israel? What hope does it give when politics in Northern Ireland is turned on its head again? In the chaos of, I know, close friends of mine, of yours, with the cancer diagnosis, the parents with dementia, the real struggles. What relevance is this old message to that? And I want you to notice right at the beginning as well, Paul cares about this too. He wants them to know what was the original Christianity, and he wants them to know what is the Christianity that actually makes a difference. He says, I want to remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, by which you're being saved, if you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you have believed in vain, which is another way of saying, unless the whole thing was a waste of time. Wonder if you ever thought that about your life. What if the whole thing was a waste? I got it wrong. I guess maybe if you're an atheist here, you're wondering that about your Christian friends. When Christian friend, are you going to realize this was all a delusion? And maybe I want to say back to the atheist friend. When atheist friend, are you going to realize that your worldview could all be a delusion? Because what we want really to build our lives on is something that is true and can actually make a difference in the face of this trouble. So I think this is a really good passage for, I guess, I don't know how many million people will be looking at this passage today, but it's a very popular choice on a very popular day. Today's Easter Sunday, there'll be millions of Christians, maybe a billion Christians around the world, saying words like this. It's a good place to look. The earliest formulation of the Christian message, and the one that tells us why it isn't all pointless, why it's not all in vain. And as I say, all I'm going to say really is what's on the theme verse. So you, if you want, you can turn open the order of service and you'll see that I've asked Michaela just to type out the theme verse just in with a line spacing in between each one. So it's just the same as on the front. This is just 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 3-5. Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. He was buried. He was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. He appeared to Cephas, he appeared to the 12, he appeared to more than 500 brothers, he appeared to James and to all the apostles. Last of all, he appeared to me. I'm going to keep saying it just because it helps me to remember it. And I've got the song to help me remember it every single time. Here we are. These are the key facts. Notice, first of all, these are historical events. So this isn't just a vibe, Christianity. It's not just a, oh yeah, I kind of like the thing they do when they get together in the theater and they sing their songs and we join in and I'm kind of into that. It's not, it's more than just the vibe. Or if we had a big cathedral with beautiful stained glass and vaulted ceilings, or if we had a hushed, or you know, whatever it is, I guess there's different kind of Christian vibes on offer around the world. But Christianity is more than that. It's actually more even than a philosophy. It's not just brilliant ideas by a brilliant thinker. Although Jesus' ideas were absolutely revolutionary, the likes of which the world had never seen before, really, or since. One of the most compelling things about Jesus is, well, if he wasn't God, where did the Sermon on the Mount come from? Because no one else has come up with an ethic like this, ever, or anything like it. You know, turn the other cheek, don't be a hypocrite. The sort of integrity of love for one another, the moral integrity that was the foundation of his teaching. But it's more than that. It's more than a vibe. It's more than a philosophy. It's more than a lifestyle. It is first and foremost, or at least it starts with, things that happened. It's a historical thing. So if you went back in history, 2000-ish years, and you went to the city of Jerusalem, not the current city of Jerusalem, because the original one got destroyed in the early centuries by the Romans and then got rebuilt. But if you went to the old city of Jerusalem, and just outside the wall, you'd see an execution. Not particularly unusual. That's where they used to kill people, just outside the city. But this execution was an unusual one, because as the centurion who killed Jesus said, surely this man was the Son of God. And it became an even more unusual execution because it didn't last very long. So 3 days later, the tomb was empty. Jesus was seen alive. This is an event. I want you to put it in that category in your head. So if I were to ask you which subject in school should cover this, again, it could be all of them, couldn't it? Because, of course, the Christian gospel touches on every single discipline. So it might touch on your science. And we've got a couple of senior academic scientists at Grace Church Greenwich, and I guess they're one of whom is sitting here today. I guess, you know, the Christian gospel impinges how you do your science. It could influence your art, and most of Western art being radically shaped by the gospel of Jesus. But maybe most people think, oh, it goes in RE, you know, religious studies. That's where you put it. Yeah, sure. I mean, any of those. But I want to say also it belongs in the history classroom, in the history syllabus, alongside other things that happened. You know, the Battle of Hastings, 1066. Julius Caesar, whenever that was, somewhere in the first century, invading Britain. Events. And of course, the thing about events is events are objective, aren't they? Events aren't just, well, that's nice for me or that's nice for you. You know, I can't say for me, the Battle of Hastings was in 1066. And Jono here says, well, that's very nice of you, Andrew, but I prefer to think of it in a sort of 1366 kind of way. Because it just wasn't in 1366. So we're about to go on our weekend away, just down the road from the big monastery that they built to commemorate beating us, the French. And that was built in, you know, the 11th century, not the 14th century. Because if you go back in history, something happened. And the same is true here. Now, it's such a simple thing to say, isn't it? But it's actually a very revolutionary one. I remember when I didn't understand this as a non-Christian at university, it was all about the vibe. You know, are you into stained glass windows or organs? The church I'd grown up with occasionally had both of those. Or are you into theatres in avant-garde architecture, like the one that you're sitting in here? And if you're sitting at the back, I think you're literally overhanging the water right now, so it's quite a cool building, but you're the bit that's that sort of... Are you into that? Don't worry, I think it's perfectly safe. I just want to... That's not really the point. Because some people are the religious type and some people aren't. And some people follow Jesus' teaching and some people don't. But when it comes to history, what happened? Like, did this man actually die on the cross? Did he actually rise on the third day? And Paul says it matters, you know. If it didn't happen, then just as a sort of vibe, it is useless. Remember, that's that question again. What relevance does this have? And Paul says it has none if it didn't happen. It is entirely pointless. Verse 17, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile. Quite strong, isn't it? I wonder whether you've ever said that to somebody. You know, your belief system, it is pointless, it's empty, it's futile. And he goes even further. Verse 19, if we have hope in this life only, we're of all people most to be pitied. Ah, oh, poor Christian. What an idiot. Throwing your life away. Maybe you do think that today about your Christian friends or family members. What losers. And Paul says, yeah, sure, yeah. Unless it happened. Like, if it actually happened that 2,000 years ago, the man who was nailed to a cross was alive again, it's an event. It changes everything. And I love how he puts in his little summary of the gospel, the eyewitness facts. He died. I would have just said, he died and he raised. That'd make it easier to remember. You wouldn't have to have such a long song, not so many actions. But he does more than that, doesn't he? He died, he was buried, he was raised, he appeared. What do the extra two steps add? They add evidence, don't they? It wasn't just that we thought he died. He didn't just lose consciousness. No, he died, and then we stuck him in a tomb. He was properly dead. And the people who put him in the tomb, you know, wrapped his body up with linen strips, and that's a good opportunity to find out if your friend is has still a little bit of shallow breathing and he's just lost consciousness. The one thing you don't do for somebody that you love is bury them when there's any chance they might still be alive. He wasn't alive. And so they buried him in a tomb. They put the stone over the entrance. And then on the third day, he rose. And that's not enough either, is it? Because how do you know that's not just a rumor? Well, he rose and he appeared, like people actually saw him after he was dead. And then that's not enough either, because then you go, well, who saw him? Well, let me tell you. He appeared to Cephas, that's the Apostle Peter by his Aramaic name. He appeared to the 12. That's the 12 apostles. He appeared to 500 brothers at one time. I guess there's some sort of crowd of people. And then Jesus just shows up, you know, after he's meant to be dead. Hello, everybody. And they all see him. And then Paul includes this really interesting little note. 500 brothers, most of whom are still alive, although a few of them have fallen asleep. Now, obviously, they're not alive now because it's 2,000 years later. But when Paul was writing 1 Corinthians to the church in Corinth, a lot of those people were still alive. In other words, what Paul is saying is there's checkable witnesses. Don't just take my word for it. Go and ask any number of the people who saw him and, by the way, were willing to stake their life on the claim, a brutal persecution in the early days of the Christian church. I mean, there is in some parts of the world today, isn't there? If you're a Christian, it's very dangerous. Afghanistan and Pakistan, North Korea. There's places where it's very dangerous to be a Christian. In the first century, it was dangerous for everyone to be a Christian at the start. But all of them wouldn't be shut up. Why? Well, because a lot of them had actually seen Jesus alive. And how are you going to silence somebody who knows that Jesus beat death? What are you going to threaten them with? I'll kill you. Okay, I mean, Jesus can raise me again. And I'm not saying that in a sort of smug way, but there is a confidence that they have in the face of death that makes total sense if they've seen Jesus get through death. 500 brothers. He appeared to James, the brother of Jesus, to all the apostles, and then Paul adds himself. And also, last of all, he appeared to me, Paul, who was once a persecutor of the church we saw in our 1 Timothy series, a persecutor, a blasphemer, a violent man. Paul, whose job was to round up this sect of people called Christians and threaten them and execute them and try to stamp the whole thing out. And then he himself encounters the resurrected Jesus and his life is turned around. And so Paul says, look, this happened. Christ died. He was buried. He was raised. He appeared. But secondly, it happened. I say secondly, this is actually almost the end of my sheet, even though it's only halfway down. So don't worry if you're thinking this is going to be a long sermon. Secondly, it all happened according to the scriptures. Sophie explained this already to the children. It means that it was all predicted. Now, I think this is very important for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it just adds to the credibility of the evidence in my mind. Like, it's not only that Jesus did the miracle of rising from the dead, but he also did the miracle of managing to sort of control history so that absolutely everything happened according to the script. Like, everything did. So you look at the crucifixion and just some of the details of his death predicted in advance. For example, they'll cast lots for my clothing. And then as the soldiers are executing him, they realize that one of Jesus' bits of clothing is woven in one piece, and they don't want to tear it up to get the fabric out of it. So they just say, well, let's just throw some dice to see who gets the whole thing. Well, that was predicted 1,000 years ago. Or when he's thirsty on the cross, they give him vinegar to drink as some sort of cruel joke. If someone's parched and you give them a cup of wine vinegar, it's pretty cruel. They do that. It's exactly what's predicted. I mean, they didn't know it was predicted, presumably, but it was in the Jewish scriptures. They even that reading we had from Isaiah chapter 53. And there's a little line in Hebrew that says they assigned him a grave with the wicked ones, plural, and with the rich one, singular, in his death. Just a little Hebrew, if you're into Hebrew. I know Joel is studying at the moment. And you can just, oh, this is plural and this is singular. A grave with the wicked ones, plural, and with the rich one, singular. And you think, oh, Jesus was crucified between two criminals, wicked ones, singular, that's the plural. And then he was given a grave by Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent member of the council, a rich one. Even the little tiny details like that, predicted according to the scriptures. But then significantly, his resurrection also predicted. Psalm 16, you will not abandon your Holy One to the grave or let him see decay. I think this is very important because one of the reasons that people nowadays scoff at the resurrection, and by the way, people did 2,000 years ago as well, the Epicureans, the Greeks who didn't believe in life after death, they said, oh, how ridiculous that you believe in a fairy story like a resurrection. And people believe that now, people believe that back then. But one of the reasons that they were scoffing it is because their worldview had no space for this. They thought, you know, we live in an effectively materialistic universe. They're pretty similar to modern day atheists in some ways. And there's just no space for a miracle. You know, the laws of physics can't be changed. There's no God who could change them in the first place. Therefore, a resurrection didn't happen. And the Jewish people didn't agree with that. Of course, there's a God who can change the laws of physics. There's a God who made the laws of physics. I mean, he made the universe. Why do you think the Big Bang went bang, apart from this God made it? This God doesn't ordinarily mess up with the laws of biology because that would make science difficult to do. Doesn't mean he can't, if he wants to, like at one point in the middle of history, mess up the laws of biology. Like, of course, with this kind of God, there could be a resurrection in principle. It's interesting, isn't it? It turns out that the atheist isn't as neutral as he or she thinks. The atheist comes to it already with a faith in materialism. You know, I believe that the world is just material, says the atheist. Oh, I don't believe the world is just material, says the Christian. I don't believe that there's a God who could mess up the laws of physics, says the atheist. Oh, I do believe that there's a God who could mess up the laws of physics, says the Christian. We're both coming with assumptions. The question is, who's got the right assumptions? And here, this little line according to the scriptures, it says, you know the God who made the world, the God who's been acting with the Jewish people for more than 1,000 years. He said he'd do this. Like, it's not surprising. It is exactly according to the script. Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. He was buried. He was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. He appeared to Cephas, to the 12, to more than 500 brothers, to James, to all the apostles, and then to me, says Paul. And I'll just put at the end, who cares? I mean, so far my talk has been, I want to try and persuade you that this happened. But you might even then say, okay, fair enough. You persuaded me, you know, I've come along, I was skeptical, but yes, sure, there was a resurrection 2,000 years ago, as predicted, with lots of witnesses. It was history. Okay, fine. So what? Should we go and have Sunday lunch now? You're like, what difference does that make? And I guess there's just sort of no end to the different implications that we could tease out. But I just want to talk about the one that's here in 1 Corinthians. I guess every different philosophy clashes with Jesus in some way or other. And I said at the beginning how everyone tries to hijack Jesus for their own cause. You know, the eco-Jesus, the Republican, Donald Trump Jesus, the socialist Jesus, the whoever you want Jesus. But actually, Jesus is his own guy. He has his own things to say. And actually, he critiques every one of those human philosophies. So Jesus would have some stern words to say to Donald Trump and his Republican Party, just as Jesus would have some challenging things to say to those on the left, just as Jesus would have some challenging things to say to those in the eco lobby or whatever. And the resurrection, I guess, for each different worldview, it has something to challenge. So, for example, it says to the Eastern worldviews, the idea of reincarnation and karma. I think I mentioned to you earlier a few weeks ago that I was watching The Wheel of Time on Amazon, partly because it costs about $12 million per episode. And I thought, well, it must be quite good if they spent that much. And it wasn't that good. They spent their $12 million per episode on everything apart from the storyline, I think, which is a bit harshly. But I persevered with it, and season two is better. So, but the whole idea is it's based on reincarnation. And the big battle is, you know, maybe we can defeat this monstrous evil being, and then we can have peace and harmony for another 5,000 years. And I mentioned this to Andrew Latimer, the other person. He just scoffed and laughed and goes, yeah, that's quite a low ambition, isn't it, for a Christian? I said, like, we're looking for eternity. Jesus saved the world forever. And all you can manage is he saved the world for 5,000 years. I mean, but to the reincarnation philosophy, the resurrection has something to say. But the 1 Corinthians philosophy, the Greek philosophy of the time, it was a kind of spiritual philosophy. As in, people were into spiritual things, they just divorced spiritual things from physical things. And I think we do something a bit similar maybe in our world. You had the actual biological, physical world, you know, of bodies and medicine and biologists and healthcare. That there's this. And then separately to that, you had the sort of religious sphere, the spiritual world. And the point is that those two worlds had nothing to do with each other. So you could leave behind the body physical stuff, and then you could be into the spiritual floaty stuff. And I think a lot of people think that Christians are trying to do the same thing. Like I'm asking for a little share of the floaty spiritual stuff in your mind. But the trouble with this in Corinth is the two things got so separated that people didn't really care about what you did with your body anymore. Like, as long as your spiritual self was going to be all sort of special and floaty and pure, then bodies were basically disposable. So it meant they had a very cheap view of sex and prostitution. I mean, who cares? It's just a body. But they didn't mind about that. That they had quite a low view of each other. Just kind of squabbling and fighting. Well, he cares about other people because I'm in my own little spiritual quest. And they end up mistreating people and mistreating themselves. And bodies don't matter if you're all into a spiritual thing. And maybe that's what you fear about the church. You know, the church is going to be so much into a sort of spiritual floaty world that it will stop caring about actual suffering like Ukraine. Or like Palestine, Israel, or like cancer, or like knife crime in the streets of London. Or, oh, it's all very well for you Christians to be in your floaty little Easter thing. But the resurrection of Jesus, it just blows apart this dichotomy. And it says Jesus, the spiritual one, he's into physical things as well. He's into bodies. Bodies matter. Jesus' body. He didn't just abandon it and float off in a spirit. No, he came back with a body. And then Paul says, and so will we. One day we'll be raised from the dead bodily and face Jesus as our judge, and we will have a bodily eternity. It's not just the spiritually stuff that matters, and it's not just the physically stuff that matters. They both matter. And the resurrection of Jesus tells us that he is of supreme relevance to both. Glenn Scrivener, who we have been here a couple of times, that we know, he has a great phrase. He says, Christianity is the only philosophy that offers hope for these bodies and this world. You know, you get the Hindu reincarnation hope, a different body, a different world, a different cycle round. Or you get the materialist hope, you know, humans will get better, but my body will just decompose and that's it. You know, whatever it is. But Christianity to say this, but these bodies here, the bodies of people in Gaza right now, the bodies of people in Ukraine right now, they matter. They're going to be resurrected by Jesus. They have an eternity decided by Jesus in heaven or hell. The resurrection matters. And you put the two together, it's very powerful, isn't it? It has to have happened for it to matter. If it didn't happen, then forget it. It's in vain. It's pointless. But Paul says it did happen. It's not in vain. It could not be more relevant to everybody here. I'm going to read those verses just one more time. Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. He was buried. He was raised on the third day according to the scriptures. And he appeared to Cephas. He appeared to the 12. He appeared to more than 500 brothers, most of whom are still alive at the time of writing, although some have fallen asleep. And he appeared to all the apostles. Last of all, he appeared also